The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into Late's edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Stevie Nicol here in the studio. A little later on in the show, Nader Manil and Shaka Hislop will be joining us as I'll be asking them whether or not Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has taken Manchester United as far as he can. But first, it's crazy. Last 48 hours have been bonkers regarding managers and coaches and everything that's been going on in Europe. A quick update. Max Allegri reported to replace Pirlo as the Juventus manager. Meanwhile, Inzaghi leaves Lazio. He's set to replace Conte as Inter manager. Zinedine Zidane resigns as Real Madrid manager. Conte and Raul are favourites for that job. Meanwhile, talk about left field. Mauricio Pochettino linked with Spurs return. Or maybe the Real Madrid job. Well, Phil Kitramidis is here from Spain and his beautiful beard. We'll be talking Zidane in a moment. Jules joins us as well. But Gab, I want to start with you and talk about Allegri to return to Juventus. A report saying this is pretty much done.
Yeah, a lot of the guys who follow Juve closely saying it's pretty much a done deal. I wasn't able to verify it myself. It almost kind of makes you wonder about the reasons why he left 2 years ago and what's changed in those 2 years. Most of all, it feels like, okay, we were going to go in a new direction. Nah, didn't work out. Didn't work out with Sarri, didn't work out with Pirlo. Now let's go back to what we were before.
What's interesting, Jules, is that there must have been plenty of other suitors for him, yet he's made that this decision to return to the club where obviously he had so much success.
Yeah, it's very interesting. We know that Fabio Paratici, the current sporting director, the one from this season, has left as well. So you suspect someone new will come. Probably not Beppe Marotta, who has worked before with Allegri, but certainly there will be a new team there. But he knows this club so well, and maybe he felt that was the right thing to do, going back to try to get more success at Juve, especially in Europe. But he must be ready for this rebuilding job that, certainly in certain position, that he will have to do as well. And that's a big job too. So I'm a bit surprised that he's gone back. Those second times round are not always successful, and they're always quite risky to take. So Allegri must feel that he's got everything to succeed again.
What happened to Zidane, Gab? I thought he was going to come in.
Were you not listening yesterday?
What?
I told you it was extremely unlikely that Zinedine Zidane was gonna go back to Juve. I mean, it's been 20 years since he left, you know. I think the interesting thing about Allegri was that, he sat out, he waited. He waited on jobs. He waited on Paris Saint-Germain. He waited on jobs in England. He was been linked to Spurs and Arsenal. He was hoping for the United job. I wonder if in the end he just kind of got tired of waiting because, you know, 1 year sabbatical is fine. That's what Pep did. 2 years, you're kind of pushing it. You know, after that, people kind of forget who you are. And so, you know, why not go back? But Jules is right. It's going to be a very, very different challenge now from what he had before. He's going to have to negotiate and navigate Cristiano's last year. Obviously, they brought in a whole raft of new players. He's going to have to navigate the exits of Chiellini, probably Bonucci as well, either this year or next year. And most of all, he's going to have to do it with a much, much tighter budget. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see whether we see the football he served up before, whether we see something different. I think he is a very versatile manager. We just haven't seen that other side of him, certainly in his 4 years at Juve. But, you know, in some ways, it's a bit deflating to those at Juve who I think did want to go in a different direction.
Meanwhile, Phil, Zidane leaving Real Madrid for the second time. Why?
It's a good question. It's the one that a lot of Real Madrid fans have been trying to answer themselves today. Can I just go back quickly to Allegri? Something doesn't quite add up here because a lot of people were suggesting Allegri's being lined up to the Real Madrid job. The day Zidane goes, Allegri is supposedly being lined up to join Inter after 2 years having not had a job, something doesn't necessarily make sense, because a lot of people were suggesting that Allegri was in pole position to take over at Real Madrid. Why did Zidane go? Many reasons, but really, he likes to be in charge, he likes to be the boss, and I think there were certain things that he might have been charged to do next season, which he didn't fancy doing it. And if he doesn't fancy doing it, he doesn't do it, because he's Zidane.
Exactly, he's kind of holding all the cards, Nigel. So what happens next for Zidane? You kind of think if Deschamps mucks things up in the summer, France?
Yeah. France, without a doubt, would be at some point his team, and he will get there, whether it's in 2022, 2024. We will have to see. I think Deschamps still has a few years in him, and certainly his relationship with the head of the French FA, Noël Le Graët, is so strong that it's hard to see Deschamps leaving anytime soon, unless there's a big disaster, or unless he doesn't fancy anymore, which I don't think will happen. So Zidane, that will come for Zidane, but a bit further down the line. Before that, I think it'd be interesting to see. They dream of him in Marseille, of course, although they're happy right now with Sampaoli. I think Juventus at some point could be appealing to Zidane. I'm not sure if the other around is true as well, but I think he will have other options. But he's in such a strong position that he will be able to choose, and even if he doesn't want to do anything while waiting for the France job, he won't have to do it.
It's quite the eclectic mix when you take a look at the names that have been linked to the Real Madrid vacancy. Now, Antonio Conte, odds on 5-4 on. Pochettino, of course, why not stick him in there as well? 2-1. Raul then at 6. Joaquin Love at 10. Xabi Alonso at 16s. Who are they going to get, Phil?
Antonio Conte is odds on for a reason. I think he's very, very highly fancied now. Raul, I think if they were going to go for Raul, he would have been announced already. They've got a ready-made Zinedine Zidane replacement. Zidane, of course, was the Real Madrid Castilla manager. He got promoted to the first team, did rather well. Raul is the current Real Madrid Castilla manager, a legend of the club, much like Zidane was. If they were going to go for him, I think they would have done it already, maybe. But he's there, he's in the background. He could be an option. I'm not a betting man, but Xabi Alonso at 16-1 could be an appealing option. He's done a sensational job with Real Sociedad B this season. Obviously, he was working for Real Madrid last season. He was in charge of their under-15s. He knows the club, which is really, really important when it comes to Real Madrid. But yeah, Antonio Conte is the favourite, and probably rightly so.
Oh, my goodness. If you're going to make a fly-on-the-wall documentary, Gab, Conte at Real Madrid would be amazing, wouldn't it? Well, it would blow up within, what, a week?
Well, he was on the verge for signing Real Madrid with Real Madrid before, of course. Look, I would find this absolutely extraordinary, because it's less than 24 hours ago that Conte negotiated his exit with Inter, where he received half of his final year's salary, the one that he's not taking because he's walking out, in severance, right? So he gets $12 million in severance for agreeing not to go coach another Serie A team. And look, and now he walks into the Real Madrid job, supposedly. To me, Conte to Real Madrid makes absolutely zero sense from Real Madrid's perspective, because, you know, it's not just the club's financial situation, but you're also getting a guy who can be a colossal pain in the rear end to the club if he doesn't get what he wants. You can just ask people at Inter, you can ask people at Chelsea, you can ask people at Juventus about that. He will go and work with the players he has and make them better and make the team better. He's very good on the training ground. But the question is, can Florentino Perez find the money somewhere to go and spend the 150 million, 200 million that Conte is going to want to spend? Otherwise, he starts moaning, because frankly, that's how he rolls. This is a person who kind of, you know, lives in a permanent state of siege, where it's him and the players against the club. And he does a good job when he persuades the club to go and spend money for players he likes. And then later, you know, he might not like them, like Kolarov or Alexis Sanchez or whatever, but that's a whole other issue. This is how he rolls. I'm not going to say it's like having Jose Mourinho Mark II at your club, but it's not far off that. And often it's without Mourinho's charm, too. So I would find this absolutely extraordinary if Real Madrid went down that road at this moment in time, at the juncture that Real Madrid are at right now.
Phil, I can see you pulling a face. Is that Gab's collar or opinion?
A bit of both, really. I think it's opinion, because a lot of Real Madrid fans would actually quite like Jose Mourinho, Mark, too. I know since leaving Real Madrid, things necessarily haven't panned out how he might have thought of, but he left a mark here, and there's a lot of Real Madrid fans that would like the sound of that. Also, by the way, there's people that think that the squad needs a good cleanup, and Antonio Conte is the man to do it, the man to whip them into shape and to get rid of some people that might not necessarily be useful next season. And I think just by saying the words Antonio Conte and appointing Antonio Conte, you could get rid of two or three players immediately, because probably quite a few might not fancy playing with him next season.
Meanwhile, Jules, Mauricio Pochettino returning to Spurs wasn't on our top 10 list of things we thought we'd be discussing this summer. And it's one of those things that you think, it's an extra time question that someone's thrown in. But no, this is real news that might happen.
I don't think it might happen. It might happen. I think he's still pushing it a bit. I think Daniel Levy, who's, as we all know, actively looking for a new manager, and I think he's got in touch with a lot of people, a lot of managers have been offered to him as well. And he thought, hang on a minute, why not trying the guy who brought the most success at the club in the last 40 years or something? And I think it's fair to try. I'm told again that it's Daniel Levy who'd been calling Mauricio Pochettino a lot. And Pochettino, it's always nice, I think, to be wanted. But even if it hasn't been perfect for him in those 6 months in Paris, I still think that he would be there next season. He's planning for next season. He's had a long meeting with Leonardo on Monday night about next season's squad and when they start the preseason and who they play against and how they play and planning all of that. I don't think you plan all of that if you don't want to be there next season. But he has only 1 year left on his contract. Maybe he wants an extension. Maybe he doesn't want that season. Anything is possible, always, of course. But I don't think it would make sense for Pochettino to go back to Spurs now with a team and a squad that is far weaker than when he took them to the Champions League final, for example, and especially if Harry Kane is likely to go and to move out of the club this summer. Pochettino going back to Spurs without Kane would not make any sense at all.
But this is weird, Jules, that we're even having this conversation as if there is a hint of a possibility that Pochettino might leave PSG, a team that he just joined, of course, halfway through a season. We saw in the odds as well, 2-1 to take over at Real Madrid, which is something we know that he wouldn't mind doing. So what's going on at PSG that this is even a conversation?
I think it's probably more the fact that he just has 1 year left on his contract. So if you're
Real
Madrid, you
there.
Know that you will have to pay something, but not as much as 5 years. If you've got a long-term contract, whether you're a player or manager, it's far more expensive than you only have 6 months left or a year left on your contract. That's just pure logic. So maybe that's where it comes from. Maybe now that Real Madrid are looking for a manager, that Zidane has gone, which was not the case in January when Poch joined PSG. They're thinking, oh man, for 6 months we missed out of him, but let's still try to get him. I don't know if Real Madrid comes knocking. If you're Pochettino, can you refuse? Like Carlo Ancelotti didn't feel like he could say no to Real Madrid, and that's why he said yes and left PSG after only 18 months in the job back then. Maybe Poch would feel the same, I don't know, but I certainly know that there's a lot of things that he lacks in Paris. But again, anything is possible.
Stephen.
It's hard to believe that Pochettino leaving PSG has got anything to do with money. Really? I mean, how much is enough? You know, he's probably got about 12, 15 million in the bank, maybe probably more.
Who hasn't?
And he's only just got to PSG. Why would he go back to Tottenham? He's not getting more money at Tottenham than he's getting at PSG. And actually, forget all that.
No.
Why is it about money? It can't be about money. There has to be a problem at PSG other than the salary the manager gets.
He took out 6 months and thought, this is terrible, I hate it here, get me out of here.
I don't think so. I mean, again, even if his relationship with Leonardo is not as good as he thought it would be, or they've got difference of opinions on certain players or position, but he was a key part in convincing Neymar to stay. He's a key part in the negotiation with Kylian Mbappe for Kylian Mbappe to stay and to convince him to stay. He's heavily involved in what they're going to do next season. So, I don't know. I don't think he's unhappy in Paris. Yeah, of course, not everything is perfect. The family is still here in London. His family, they haven't moved yet to Paris because of the pandemic and all of that. So, maybe that's a problem as well. He would like to be with his family again. I don't know. But I would find it really hard to believe that he wants to leave Paris to go back to Spurs right now with the project, like Stevie said, with the kind of project that Spurs have right now, which I'm not sure is even a project, and what he has currently in Paris with Mbappe and with Neymar and taking them to the semi-final of the Champions League this season. I would find it incredible. But yeah, maybe there's something we don't know. He's unhappy. I mean, on Tuesday morning, he went on holidays, and I think on Wednesday or Thursday, he puts out a photo of himself with a PSG t-shirt on social media, like if he was very happy at the club and things like that. So again, maybe that's PR and publicity and a spin-off, but I don't think he's that unhappy in Paris at all.
You know,
Dan, he has a year left on his contract. He's got 1 year left. No manager at a club like Paris Saint-Germain wants to go into the season knowing that his contract is up at the end of the year. I think it's as simple as that.
Gab, listen, what we're talking about now, right? We're talking about all these clubs who, if there's one thing that's going to happen definitely in the next 5 years, is this is going to get worse. Because clubs right now, no manager's going anywhere for any length of time.
Yeah.
Nobody. So why is a manager worried if he's only got a year left in his contract? It's not like he can say, because, well, if I don't go now, I might not get that job. Because all these jobs are going to be coming available, well, if not every 12 months, but at least every 24 months, the way things are. So any manager worth his salt, but, if they're sitting thinking, oh, I've only got 12 months left, they're in the wrong job.
OK, we've got to move on.
It's about security, though. It's about leverage over Mbappe, over Neymar, over the job you're going to do in the next year. Even if that extra year just means they pay you extra compensation when they sack you, it's important to a lot of managers these days.
Okay, let's move on. Gab, Inzaghi to Inter, is this a good hire?
I mean, they had to get somebody in quickly. He's done a very good job at Lazio, I think, often in difficult circumstances. He's a very nice man. And he plays with three at the back. So the idea is they're going to continue trying to play the way Conte did and see if Simone Inzaghi can do it.
It's not exactly an overwhelming resume for the defending champions, Gab. A nice guy isn't exactly something you particularly want to pin on the top of your CV.
Well, no, he's also a guy who got Lazio into the Champions League several times with a budget that was dwarfed by some of the bigger clubs. I think after dealing with first Spalletti and then Conte, I think the club probably welcomes somebody who's a little bit more level-headed and less confrontational. And I think it's a good hire. He was linked with the Juve job as well before they got Sarri, and you know, he's seen as a manager who's on the rise. I think he's done it for a long time at Lazio. Finishing top four at Lazio in those conditions, you know, that's no small feat, I think.
Romelu Lukaku taking to social media saying, "Thanks, Antonio. You changed me as a player and made me stronger, and we won together. Winning is, and it's all that matters to you, and I'm glad that I've had you as a coach. I'll take your principles for the rest of my career. I owe you a lot." Gab, of course, you've spoken at length about the fact that Inter need to cut their wage bill. Conte out. Could Lukaku be the next one?
I don't know. I think there's other players that obviously they would rather sell if they have to go and sacrifice somebody. I mean, Lukaku's so integral to what Inter do right now. I think it's more likely if there is an asset that has to be shifted. I think it's more likely it could be somebody like Lautaro Martinez. Hakimi as well has also been suggested, although he's only been there a year, and I think you'd want to do everything you can to hang on to him. They would, in their minds, maybe somebody like Eriksen might be easier to shift, but then he's on big wages. No, I don't think it's going to be, I generally don't think it's going to be Lukaku, unless Conte lands somewhere and demands Lukaku and tricks his owner into spending silly money. But there is no question that Inter are going to have to raise money this summer, and it's hard to see them doing it without selling, you know, at least one of those 6, 7, 8 core players that they have.
What price would make their head turn on Lukaku again?
I mean, I think it would have to be, remember, they spent a lot of money to sign him. I think it would have to be north of that. He's a better player now. I think it would have to be something, you know, in the 100 million range. Again, without getting all boring, I know Craig's not here and bringing up amortization and whatever, you know, for their books, they could make more money by selling Lautaro Martinez at 60 million than they could selling Lukaku at 100 million. And so obviously Lautaro is the guy who they would rather sell, but they would rather not sell Lautaro. But obviously there are contractual issues as well. So somebody's going to have to go, but I think they're going to do everything they can to hang on to Lukaku. And I generally don't think Lukaku particularly wants to move. He's very happy in Milan.
Phil Gavin-Jules, thank you very much. A lot more from Gavin-Jules in the latest edition. It's a bold bumper podcast. Be sure to check out. It's available to download now.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Do you want some Europa League final stat attack? Well, tough, you're getting it anyway. 16th straight time a Spanish team has defeated a non-Spanish side in a European final since 2001. Make an excited noise, Stephen.
Ooh.
David De Gea failed to save his last 40 penalties faced for club and country.
Not surprised.
Oh, that's not that. Unai Emery's fourth Europa League title, that's the most of all time. And Manchester United now 4 straight seasons without silverware. Craig was pulling no punches yesterday in his criticism of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
You have a man who should not, and I've been saying it for a couple of years now, a man who should not be managing Manchester United. He's a serial loser. He's a serial loser. He's now lost a final. He's been pumped out of, 4 semi-finals at least. They were out of all the domestic competitions. To me, that's just absolute proof, if needed, and it's not needed for me, that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is only managing this club, Dan, because he was a former player. This is Man United. This is a side that are getting their backside whopped by Liverpool and Man City. This is a side that can't even win the Europa League now. This is a side that are not dining at the big table in European football, and yet they continue to say, we're going in the right direction. We have the right man in charge. Who really believes that? Who really, really believes they have the right man in charge? When it comes to the crunch and all the big games that Solskjaer's managed at this club, they have lost. That's not fantasy analysis, that's fact. But it's down to the fact they do not have a manager who's going to cut the mustard for this football club going forward. And I'm fed up telling people that, but I'm telling you, until I go to my grave, I'm right about this one.
Let's welcome in, shall we, Shaka and Nadim to the show. Nadim, is Craig right?
Well, he feels very strongly about it, and it seems like he's prepared to die on that hill. And to be honest, for me, I don't think Solskjaer's the worst manager in the world. I think, obviously, looking at this spell now at United, they haven't won anything, so questions will be asked. And I think overall in that final yesterday, it felt as if at times he was outcoached by Emery, but I don't know. It's not all doom and gloom, I don't believe, because you could look at, say, someone like Pochettino, who's maybe coming back to Spurs now, and you know, he's won the equivalent of the FA Cup with Paris Saint-Germain, and he's not won a league title, but he's still seen as somebody who can bring success to a team. So I'm not sure. I think United have been very disappointing in this last month or so, but until this point, you know, they had a good head of steam. But like I say, Craig is more than prepared to die on that hill. And, you know, ultimately, I'm not with him 100%, but I can see why questions are being asked, because there are a lot of Man United supporters who really aren't happy with how things are going.
You know, Craig's talking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer not being ready for this job. Do you think Alex Ferguson would be standing, telling the press, game after game, defeat after defeat, bad result after bad result, that we're getting better? Mm. Not a chance. He's talking about after this game that we didn't turn up, and then in the second half, we didn't take control. Alex Ferguson would have ripped half of their heads off in the dressing room to make sure that they took control, to make sure that maybe they hadn't turned up in the first half, but they would have turned up in the second half. I'm sorry. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the last guy I'm going to be scared of walking in a dressing room after a poor performance.
On that point, Nadim, Antonio Conte is available, of course, after leaving Inter. This is a proven winner. We know, you know what you're going to get from him. Yeah. If you're Manchester United, what are you seeing from Solskjaer? What have you seen that you need to stick with him and not bring in someone of the pedigree of Conte?
You know, it's as Craig was alluding to, I think the fact that he is a legend at the club, I think that is buying him time, especially at this moment in time when fans are protesting against the ownership and so on. And obviously fans are disappointed. But I don't know how many will be saying, you know, Solskjaer has to go, Solskjaer has to go, because they're still kind of clinging in some ways to an identity that exists within him. So, yes, they could remove him and you could bring in Conte. You know, it might get the fans excited and so on. But into someone like Conte, you know, he would transform a club. And is that what Manchester United want to see? And again, like, the toughest thing about Manchester being a Manchester United player and Manchester United fan right now is you will always compare yourself to the glory days under Sir Alex Ferguson. Any manager who comes in, like, can he give their hairdryer treatment to the same way? Can he galvanise a team in the same way? And ultimately, most of those managers are elsewhere. And even some of those managers themselves, they don't have the same characteristics as a Sir Alex Ferguson does. But that's when most United fans felt the fondest about their football club. So, you know, for them, if they can afford to sack Solskjaer now, I'm not sure given the protests. But, you know, when you find some of these big name managers on the market, it would be naive to not at least look at them. And, you know, maybe this is going to be the summer for United, but maybe there'll be some unrest if that is the case.
We know fans are fickle, Xhaka. If Conte comes in and wins a couple of games, Solskjaer is long forgotten. The more and more you analyse what's going on, surely it is the time to take that risk, isn't it?
Well, if you're looking at this from a footballing perspective, if you're looking at this from in terms of the football, it's, you know, this is a no-brainer.
That's the only perspective that matters, isn't it?
Well, that's the only perspective that matters to you and me, us in the studio, and maybe to fans. My issue with this, or my issue with Manchester United, and maybe some reluctance to pull the trigger, is who's in charge of that club? The Glazers, as we've spoken about a lot over recent weeks, are more interested in the bottom line of that football club. We had Mark Ogden on talking about there's been absolutely no investment in the infrastructure, in the stadium, in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. You have somebody who's not going to rock the boat too much, who's not going to come out and say, or be critical of you in the press, whatever you do, who's going to sing from the club team hymn sheet. And as far as owners who are only interested in the bottom line are concerned, that is absolutely perfect. As far as the Glazers are concerned, probably the last thing they need is somebody with a proven track record coming in and criticising every decision they make. Mm. They don't want that. So, which is why I say, if we're still here talking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer come September, you know exactly why.
Meanwhile, Xhaka, I want your views on penalties, in particular goalkeepers taking penalties. Edison was asked about it, saying the fifth one, I'm taking it the decisive one regarding whether or not it goes to a penalty shootout in the Champions League final. I can't imagine you would be taking the fifth one, Shaq.
No, I wouldn't be. I'll be number 11. I'm quite confident of that.
Listen, Shaq, why didn't De Gea just whack it?
I don't know why he didn't do that. I mean, the thing is, you just have to go with, well, certainly in De Gea's case, as with Rui, you just go with what feels right, in the moment. It's not something you practice, certainly not under any kind of pressure. You don't have a favoured side. You don't have a favoured penalty to take. You just do what feels right in the moment. And so I do sympathise with De Gea.
Stevie, you were saying goalkeepers can hit the ball harder than anyone.
Well, goalkeepers are the ones that I've seen, the ones that I've played with, strike the ball as good, if not better, than outfield players. And goalkeepers I've seen taking penalties. My goalkeeper, Matt Rees, at the Revs, he absolutely was in the first five to take penalties.
Right.
He would just smash it, strike it cleanly. Same as Villarreal's goalie.
Right.
Kevin Pressman, Sheffield Wednesday, was one of the best penalty takers I've ever seen.
Right.
He did the same thing. He just hit through the ball. And then De Gea stands up and tries to be clever and side foots it into the bottom corner.
No. Rob Allard would tell us he's the greatest penalty taker ever.
Well, he would. Nobody else would.
He didn't take any, ever, no.
He never took any. And he never saved a penalty either.
Right.
Don't kid yourself. He never saved one penalty in the final.
Okay. Well,
they all missed. Just letting you know.
And Nadum?
Sorry, Bruce.
He's not.
Yeah, so I have a story for you, if you could bear with me for a second.
Okay, make it good.
So yesterday on the show, this will be a good one. Yesterday on the show, when you were talking about going down the line and seeing people scoring penalties and thinking you're at the end of it, well, in 2009, we were playing in the European Championships for England, and we went to a penalty shootout in the semi-finals against Sweden, and we had a man sent off, so we practiced penalties and stuff before we got to the tournament, and it turned out, so I'm horrendous at penalties, so I was supposed to be going last, and the person before me was Micah Richards, and they're going through, everybody scoring, Joe Hart steps up, slaps it in, he scored the third, fourth goes in, fifth goes in, and as the fifth goes in, Micah turns to me and says, are you okay if we swap? That's how nervous he was about taking penalty. He was asking me, the last man, to swap with him. So let's just be glad that in that penalty shootout never got to him, because those people down there, it is squeaky bum time, to say the very least.
That's a belter.
That's good, isn't it? Very good. Nadum, it's the only time you're going to be on before the final. Your beloved City, of course, taking on at Chelsea. City are big favourites, 9-4 on Chelsea, meanwhile, as you would expect, outsiders at 7-4. What's your prediction? How do you see this one going?
Do you know, as the way the season's finished, I like City just that little bit more. I think for Chelsea, the fact that they lost that last league game of the season, it means you're not really entering that final phase with good energy. Whereas for City, you know, they played so well against Everton. Aguero got a bit of a vibe as well. Jesus played well. Sterling played well. You know, it was a nice atmosphere for them. So I do like City's confidence going into it. And for me, you know, I could be very wrong here and I could die on this hill, but I just believe that if City play well, then they can beat absolutely anybody. So going into it, I am probably leaning 60-40 in City's favour, whereas a couple of weeks ago, I would have said it was a 50-50, but obviously time will tell, and it's a one-off game, isn't it?
What's the score, Nathan?
I'm going to say 2-1 to Man City.
I know this is going to help you sleep tonight, but Stevie and Shaq will be giving us their predictions tomorrow. The excitement. Who do they think will win the Champions League final this weekend? Be sure to join us on the next edition of the show.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I thought these were going to be the last ones, but apparently there is going to be a final power rankings after the Champions League matchup between City and Chelsea. So I suppose we've only got to suffer two more of these. Shaka, take us through it.
I can hear the excitement in your voice, Dan.
Yes.
Can't wait. First of all, last week was all about the cups. This week is more about the league finishes.
Right.
Saying that, Chelsea are in there because they have to play the Champions League final. Chelsea 10, PSG 9, Rangers, I had to give Rangers a mention at 8. Dortmund are down to 7. I know they were number 1 last week, but it was about the cups. Villarreal at 6. After winning Europa League. Lille, Atletico Madrid, and then my top three, Inter Milan, even without Antonio Conte, Bayern Munich, and the English champions and European finalist Manchester City top this week's power rankings. You're welcome.
Atleti
win the... last out, turn the lights off. We're done.
Atleti win the league, but they drop two places, Shaq?
Yes.
Shaka, Chelsea. Talk me through Chelsea. I thought the power rankings was about what you've been doing, not what's upcoming. Chelsea have been... They lost two of the last three. So how are they possibly in the top 10?
Because according to the European Champions League, they're finalists. So they're in. They're about to play the biggest game in European football.
Yeah. Oh, that was very convincing. I will definitely keep my mouth closed. You're right.
Nadim, a highlight
Thank
of your
you
broadcasting
very much.
Career, I'm sure this is. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I always love power rankings because I was always very critical of them. But they're good because it gets people realizing that whoever writes them runs out of time as they're being told to do it, because clearly that's what happened to Shaka. There's no way Chelsea are in it because they're in the Champions League final, but they've gone down too. And Atletico just won the league, but they're down as well. Yeah. Liverpool have made it into the Champions League in third, but they're out.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
Come on.
You know, it's fine. It
you
creates
can't
conversation.
Throw Liverpool in. They only won the last five games in a row. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, why would you dispute Chelsea for that reason?
Juventus are out.
It's about their league finish.
Right, so where's Leipzig?
Their season is done.
Where's Leipzig then?
You're out.
Where's Leipzig?
Yeah.
Huh?
Why is Borussia Dortmund at seven?
Why what?
Why is Borussia Dortmund at number seven? Why are they even in the top 10?
Why is PSG even in the top 10?
Well, Dortmund are in the top 10 because they won the cup last week and they've won something like 8 in a row or something like that. And why are PSG there?
Yes.
Yes, PSG are there, yes.
Why?
Why?
Because they finished second by what? A point and were French Cup champions.
They finished second in the league.
In.
Yeah, they deserve. Okay.
So Manchester United finished second in the league, Shaq?
Yeah, they're not in it.
Yeah, but they didn't win a domestic cup, did they?
So Dortmund have gone from first last week to
second.
That
wasn't by a point either, was it?
Right, this is just ridiculous.
Oh, God.
PSG won two domestic cups.
Don is very
cups.
Angry with you, Shaq.
Wait me to tell you.
Well, no, that's fine. That's good. We'll be back next week. I can't wait for the final one.
Let me tell you.
The Euros.
These are
rankings.
Getting better.
Oh, God.
I am so proud of myself.
Everyone is back for extra time. There are so many questions for Shaka about goalkeepers and penalties. He'll be answering them all, which will be much better, I promise, than this. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, thank you very much for that. What a lovely way to end. But wait, we haven't finished yet. Extra time is next. Nadim and Shaq are back to answer your tweets. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Stevie Nicol with me in the studio. We also welcome Shaka Hissal and Nader Manua to the show. Nader, we've got to talk about your press release today. ESPN announced the lineup for the Euros, including yourself. Some lovely pictures, likes of Del Piero, McManaman, Chris Coleman, even Burley looking good. You not looking quite as good. What happened? Are we going passport photo or mugshot? What look were you going for?
It's somewhere in between. He said he needed a picture, and I was like, well, what type of picture? So I thought, let me do like a serious one, because I know when it comes down to like immigration and stuff in the USA, it's going to be very serious face and all that. But I think I misjudged it. But the good thing about this is the only way is up from this point, and I can only look better than the picture's gone out for that press release.
Yeah,
so thank you. Thank goodness for that.
You set the bar really low, though, Nader. Okay, then. We've had a lot of questions for Shaka and penalties. Shaka, it is often said that during a penalty shootout, there's no pressure on the goalkeeper and all on the penalty taker. But that's not really true, is it?
Not really, as well, especially in a penalty shootout. Listen, if it's the best penalty taker in the team, there's not really a lot of pressure on you as a keeper to make the save. But if you're talking, you know, out of five, you want to save one, maybe two. I think you're under pressure to at least get those kinds of numbers.
De Gea hasn't saved one in 40, Shaq. Not great.
Yeah, and I think being a fully paid member of the goalkeepers union, you have to find some context to that. I mean, if there are 40 good kicks, there's 40 good penalty kicks, and that's it. The 10 against Villarreal were incredible.
Yeah.
I don't think any of them could have been saved.
Yeah, they were good penalties, weren't they, Stevie?
No, they were fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, Emery said they didn't practice or anything.
No, you can't practice, and it's completely different to when you step on the field when it matters. When there's a crowd behind you,
yeah.
The pressure's on. You can stand forever in a day in a training field taking penalties and scoring every one, but when it comes, when it matters, it's a different ballgame.
For Shaq, go on.
So here's the other thing to that, Dan.
Oh.
And again, I heard Frank talking about it yesterday. You can't really scout penalty takers outside of maybe the first three. Maybe the first two or three penalty takers, you know what's their preferred side, what they're going to do. But after that, nobody takes a penalty. So you don't know where they're going, what's their preferred side, what they're going to do with it. So at that point, it's just, you know, kind of you cross your fingers and hope for a bit of luck.
Well, that brings us on to the next tweet, which you pretty much answered, Shaq. There were photos that De Gea had instructions taped onto his towel where the Villarreal players were likely to place their penalties. Were there any similar tips given to you during your playing days?
Well, especially when it comes to penalty shootouts, two or three penalty takers, you know which side they prefer to go. You know, after that, so for instance, Albiol came out after and said the last time he took a penalty, he was playing under 13s. Well, you know, what are you supposed to do about that? Well, when he was 12 against Happy Vale Rovers, he went to the left. I mean, there's nothing you could do about that.
Who was he playing, Shaq?
You're guessing at that point.
Who was he playing?
Huh?
Happy Vale.
He's playing
Rovers.
Against Happy Vale.
Oh,
Happy
really?
Vale Rovers.
Yeah, a big Spanish team.
Yeah, under 12s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Steve, that's who he's playing against.
From a penalty taker's point, like obviously you missed in a big European Cup final, Liverpool yep. still won. Like, what was your mindset going into that whole scenario?
Well, the problem, what happens to you? So number one, I was 20 years old.
Right.
So I was inexperienced.
You were naive.
Yeah. But I had scored. I was the only person. We had a rehearsal before we left. Five penalty takers. I was one of them. I was the only one that scored.
Right.
And in the final, I was the only one that missed. And the problem is, there's two things happen. The first thing is, you're desperate to see the ball hitting the net. Mistake number one.
Right.
It's on the telly. You can watch it over and over. Keep your head down. I didn't do that. And the second thing that happens to you when you're not sure and you're a little uptight is the clarity of everything. You know, when you're in a training field and you're in a nice setting, you know, everything's crystal clear, the goals look pretty big, the whole thing. when the pressure starts coming on, yeah, everything closes in a little. You're not quite as confident. You can't see as clear. All of those things completely change it. And that's why practising penalties is just a little, well, big bit false.
What were you saying about Grobbelaar as well? Taking the credit for, oh, in the shootout.
No. Maybe De Gea should have kidded on he had spaghetti legs.
Right, that'd be it.
Because according to Bruce, that's what happened.
Whose truck is backing up towards the house? Is that you, Shaka? I assume so. Yeah.
So we got aeroplanes and you got trucks.
It's payday. It's payday, guys. Yeah.
It's payday. Shaka, I thought you'd stopped asking for it in single.
He must have another job then.
Who's backing up, Shaka?
I don't know. It's a street over. It's not even my street.
Wow. Shaka, have you taken a penalty before in your career? And if you were De Gea, what would you say to the guys in the locker room after missing?
I've not taken a penalty in my professional career. I took a few in college, though, and I scored very handsomely, I'll also add.
Yes.
Yes. If I'm De Gea, there's nothing to say. Listen, there's nothing to say. What can you say?
Yeah.
10 good kicks all scored, or 11 good kicks all scored. Nobody's really expected me to score mine at that point, you know. What can you say?
Yeah. Obviously, Liverpool went on to win the European Cup. How do you think your career would have been different if they didn't?
I don't think it would have been any different.
You don't think so? You don't think you'd be haunted by that, the man who missed the penalty? Liverpool didn't win the European Cup because of Steve Nicol.
No.
All around, all day, that's all people say to you.
No.
25 years on, you're sat in Bristol, Connecticut. Someone brings it up.
Well, in 86, I missed a chance in the World Cup to put Scotland into the second round for the first time in their history, and I missed it. And I still to this day get dog's abuse about it.
Yeah, that's Eleanor.
Yeah. That's a message in the kids. But it never affected me. So whenever I went back to play for Scotland and I got dog's abuse for it, never affected me.
It didn't bother you?
No, you just got on with it.
Shaka, if it even came down to if you had to be the 11th penalty taker, what would you do? Put it in the top corner, slot it in the bottom corner, or a Panenka?
Shut your eyes and head up.
there's absolutely no way I'm trying a Panenka. Absolutely none. None.
You just smash it, Shaka. Yeah?
Across my body, mid-height, trying to get it as close to the post as possible. That's it.
Nadim, you mentioned in the show that you didn't have to take one in the shootout in England under 21s. Have you ever had to take a penalty?
No, and I'm very happy about that because I'm very, very conflicted. So every time I would take one in training to get ready for something, I always scored to the keeper's left, but I never struck it well. And every time I struck it well to the keeper's right, they saved it. So I never knew what I was supposed to be doing. And also, I've been desperate to make this point, and I think Stevie might agree with this. As far as penalties go, there are two different types of people, I believe. They're the ones who are excited about the opportunity to score, and they're the ones who are petrified about the opportunity to miss.
Right.
And I fell into the latter.
Yeah.
So every time there was a penalty shootout, I was thinking, oh my God, the keeper knows where I'm going to go. I don't know what to do next. And as you can see, I was defeated from the get-go.
Am I right in thinking one of your MLS Cups went to penalties?
Yeah.
So what's that like when you're deciding who is going to take the penalty in what order? Have you got people like looking at the ground, like avoiding eye contact? Like...
Yeah. Yeah, you know who. Put it this way. It's not about figuring out who wants to take one, because you can spot them a mile away, just as you can spot all the ones that are either not making eye contact, or they're hiding, or they're, I'm going for a drink.
Yes.
Or, so, yeah, it's actually straightforward pretty much to a certain point.
Yeah.
Who's taking them? After that, then you're just hoping that they'll get it on target at least.
For Nadim, do you think Aguero will be the first substitute Pep calls upon in the final? He's demonstrated he's still one of the most potent strikers in world football.
I'm going to say no. I would like it to be the case because having seen him against Everton at the weekend coming on, like the energy was incredible. But I just don't see it, especially because if he's coming on, it means that something's going wrong elsewhere in the front line. And ultimately, I think those players have all the potential to play well tactically and technically and all that stuff. So I don't see it. But to see Sergio Aguero in the final of the Champions League, I would love it. But I just don't think he's going to be the first substitute.
Here we go. This is a question right up your alley, Stephen.
Oh, great.
Given that Inter may suffer from an exodus of players, who should Chelsea focus more on signing to challenge for the title next season? Kane or Lukaku?
Oh, that's easy. Are you serious? It's not even a question.
Lukaku.
Well, not close. Not close. I'm not even... Of course it's Kane.
Of course it's Kane?
Not even close.
Is it that simple, Nathan?
Wow.
I don't know. I don't have the same history with Lukaku as maybe other people have on the show, but yeah. I like both. But I think in this moment, Lukaku looks very happy in Italy, so I think he'd go for Kane.
Well, Conte leaving. What if you can get Lukaku for half the price, Stevie?
For half the price?
Yes.
Kane
is 100, Lukaku's 50.
50? Yeah, I'd take Lukaku for 50.
Oh!
For 50 million.
I wasn't expecting you to give that answer.
You can't buy a newspaper and a bag of chips for 50 million these days. So for 50 million, I'll take Lukaku.
What's a newspaper?
Well, I'll show you. Come to my house. I've got loads of them. I've got stuff wrapped up in them in the loft.
Shaka, Stevie sent me a text. I think you're okay if we say this. Saying that his wife has already bought Christmas presents.
Seriously, I went in the house last week and she was wrapping stuff, right? And I looked at it and it was Christmas paper. And I went,
what?
I went, what's that? She went, what do you mean? I said, is that Christmas paper? She went, yeah, I'm wrapping Christmas presents. I'm like, why are you doing that? She went, well, I saw a couple of things and I mean, you know what it's like, come Christmas and everything's a lot dearer, so they were a great price, so I thought, I'll just get them and I'll just put them away for Christmas.
Failed to prepare, Stevie.
Oh, but the problem was, she wasn't wrapping just two things.
Right.
She was wrapping four things.
Wow.
But the other two were things she'd put away a couple of years ago that she'd forgotten about. Regular occurrence. Every year.
Wow. Elves in your basement.
Honestly.
Stevie, should Liverpool look into the market for a replacement into Wijnaldum, or should they be already planning a future with Curtis Jones in that very role?
No, they absolutely need to go out and get somebody.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a good chance that Curtis Jones will turn out to be a fantastic player, but he's not quite ready for that, you know, first name on the team sheet. And you have to cover your bases. You need a squad. Look at City. Look at the depth they have. Look at the fight they have to get in the side. That's what you need. You need players that are pushing everybody, regardless of what position it is. So 100%, you need to go and sign somebody. And by the way, you can go and sign Bissouma from Brighton.
Oh.
That's who I would sign if I was Klopp.
Stevie, over the last decade in the Premier League, only one team has retained league titles once. Why has it become tough?
Why has it become tough? It's always been tough.
Yeah.
It's a whole host of things. It's really not just down to one thing. It's a lot of it's psychological. A lot of it can come down to whether you have injuries during the season. It can come down to decisions. I mean, there are so many things that have to go right in order for you to win the Premier League title or the old First Division.
Right.
I mean, look at City. Would we turn round and say that City, had they not signed Bruno Diaz,
been
Ruben.
In the position...
Hey, Ruben, sorry. Ruben Diaz, would they be in the position
now? Why do you keep calling him Bruno?
I don't know. I call him Bruno the first time and I just do it every time. So, you know, without the signing of Diaz, are we talking about City as great as they are right now if they hadn't signed him? You know, so there's all kinds of different reasons.
Who did you get wrong as well all the time? Brendan Rodgers? Didn't you just call him Brendan Rodgers?
No. Tottenham. went into Milan. We Dutch guy.
Ericsson?
Yeah.
Ericsson.
Eric Christensen. I used to call him Eric Christensen all the time. I'd be like, ah, it's Christian Ericsson.
Robin did it this year. Torres has announced he's returning to football. Did the guys ever want to come back after retiring? You played five-a-side today, Nathan. How would you assess your performance?
Yeah. I thought overall I was very good, but no, they need to retire from that as well. Don't expect to ever see me playing football again. I'm out. I'm done.
Wow.
I'm so done.
It must be weird because you, in your head, you must still be able to think you can do the things you could, but now obviously you can't.
No. I still can, but I just don't want to. Like, I'm done. I don't want to feel like this anymore. I just want to rest. Let me play some golf.
What's going on? What happened in this game?
I'll play golf. I'll do that. That's what men do. I'll play golf. That's fine with me.
No, Nathan, you've got to give some more details about what happened tonight that has left you in this dire strait.
We played for an hour. It was just too long. It was too long, and I paid to do it. Like, enough is enough. I'm going to play golf.
Wow. How much did you pay to play?
Too much. That is the number. Too much.
You went back in goal, Stevie. That's how you finished your five sideways.
As an amateur.
Yes.
Yeah. But as a pro, I finished because I was kicking people.
Right. Yeah. No. But I mean, as an amateur.
Yeah. I went in goals. I played for my daughter's co-ed team.
Okay.
I thought it'd be nice to go for a few beers with my daughter after we played.
Nice.
And then 10 minutes into my first game in goal.
Yes.
Some idiot who couldn't control his body, because amateurs can't control their body,
right?
The way professionals can.
Yeah.
So you know, when you're a pro and you see you're not going to get a ball, then you put the brakes on, you stop, and you go elsewhere.
Right.
Unfortunately, this pudding couldn't control his body. Was at least 2 yards away from me when I went down on my knee. Shaka, it was absolutely great. It was textbook.
Yeah.
Down on one knee.
Yes.
Everyone behind the ball. And then as I go to get up, this idiot comes running into me and kneed me right in the ribs. I had to get carried off and I had to go to hospital. That was my last game.
Wow. Shaka, what was your last game? You playing in those, like, Legends games, yeah? When you had a freebie trip to China.
I played in a few Legends games, but I really found my calling with the town over 40s. Well, I was a striker, Dan.
As a what?
The scouts were just starting to come round.
Yeah.
And you know.
Then what happened to your hamstrings?
I had some injury issues.
Yes.
Let's just leave it at that.
Final question, Stevie. A throwing coach, a defensive wall coach, and a penalty shootout coach. Which of these three jobs, if done correctly, would make a huge difference to a team's performance?
Throwing coach, a penalty.
Yes.
A penalty coach.
Yes. Or a defensive wall coach.
A defensive wall coach.
Yes.
A wall coach.
Aye, 100%. I'm with Shaka. A wall coach.
Right. Okay.
100%. Well, because today people can manipulate the ball so much that if you leave just a wee smidgen of a gap or anything, then the ball's in the back of the net.
Right.
So to get that correct every single time is absolutely huge. I mean, a throwing coach.
Nathan, did you ever have a throwing coach?
No, but I'll be honest with you. There were a couple of managers who got really annoyed because we always gave the ball away from throw-ins. So there was actually scope for a throwing coach. And whereas the guys are going for the defensive wall coach, the issue with that is that you need people in the wall who actually want to be in the wall. And those people are few and far between. But if you get a throwing coach right, then you maintain possession that little bit better.
Uh-oh.
And as a consequence, you can be good.
Yeah, but if you get a wall wrong, the ball's in the back of the net. You can recover from a throw.
I know, but the
and by the way, actually,
it's
like,
the people,
can I ask you?
It's the people in the wall.
Can I ask you, Nido?
It's the people in the wall, though. They don't want to be there.
Yeah. Can I ask you about the throw-in, right? So with the coaches not, when somebody messed up, because I always assumed when I was coaching, when I'm watching people messing up, then you have to teach them. You have to go and work with them. So why did the coaches not do that? Or did they just not know what they were doing?
The coach... Well, they weren't specialists with it. That's the thing. So if you're talking about other coaches, then so be it. But with the throwing ones, as from your time,
it's not Pythagoras' theorem, by the way.
Down the line.
No.
But if you call it a set piece, coach, would you then buy into it more? What do you reckon?
Well, again, I don't. I'm not so sure that. Why does your? And by the way, let's get this right. Every team has got about six coaches, right?
Right.
On the side.
This be a specialist coach.
Never mind the specialists.
Right.
Are you telling me that they don't? They don't. You know, in training, and you play all your games and your pre-season, that you're not doing free kicks and you're doing throw-ins and you're going. You're going through everything. Surely that's part of your job.
Shaka, would you like to add to this at all?
No, I'm good.
No, a goalie coach, I do agree with.
Oh, yes, a goalie coach.
No, we're talking specialist subjects now.
Right, I think that's enough of this now. Thank you very much, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be looking ahead to the Champions League final. We'll be hearing Steve Nicol and Shaka Hislop's predictions. How exciting.
Ooh.